Greetings, Meltopians. Are you looking to delve deeper into the world of Meltopia? Then check out our Patreon, where you can find written mythos pieces, world maps, found footage, art, Patreon-exclusive shows, and more. Just go to patreon.com/Meltopia and join one of our tiers for access to great new content. Brave the forbidden and embrace the darkness.
Hey, Prime members, are you tired of ads interfering with your favorite podcasts? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/adfreepodcasts. That's amazon.com/adfreepodcasts to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did I hear you're shopping for a car? Because I've been at it for ages. Ugh, such a time suck, right?
Not really. I bought it on Carvana. Super convenient.
Oh, then comes all the financing, research. Am I right?
Well, you can, but I got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan in like 2 minutes.
Yeah, but then all the number crunching and terms, right?
Nope. I saw real numbers as I shopped, found my dream car, and got it in a couple of days.
Wait, like you already have it?
Yep.
Oh.
Go to Carvana.com to finance your car the convenient way.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is an ad from BetterHelp. As kids, we were always learning and growing, but at some point as adults, we tend to lose that sense of curiosity and excitement. Therapy can help you continue that journey because your back-to-school era can come at any age. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online therapy you can do from anywhere. Rediscover possibility with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Discover Hydro, the best-kept secret in fitness. Hydro is the state-of-the-art at-home rower that engages 86% of your muscles, delivering the ultimate full-body workout in just 20 minutes. From advanced to beginner, Hydro has over 500 classes shot worldwide and taught by Olympians and world-class athletes. For a 30-day risk-free trial, go to Hydro.com and use code ROW450 to save $450 on a Hydro Pro rower. That's HYDROW.com, code ROW450.
The sky was especially foreboding, thick thunderheads rolling across the heavens, darker and more menacing than the days before. Each rumble of thunder echoed like the bellow of some primal, unseen force. Below this tempestuous canopy, three unlikely travelers moved cautiously through the warped and sinister town. their boots sinking into the mud as a suffocating fog coiled around their ankles. Wesley and his companions pressed themselves against the crumbling wall to their right, doing their best to remain unseen. Ahead of them, a cluster of twisted figures shuffled through the mist. Their cloaks shifted unnaturally, betraying the hidden, grotesque limbs writhing beneath the fabric. Appendages that seemed more imagined than real, yet no less terrifying for it.
Jesus, it's a fucking circus here.
The group walked by, their presence an unyielding assault upon all that is sane. The men traveled through the black alleys and the casted shadows, traversing an alien town that would tear them apart.
How fucking far away is this place? I'm not quite sure. I think it's close, though.
It was in the center of town, so it can't be too far, right? Sal led the trio past a few more houses, where grotesquely malformed statues loomed ominously above them. This section of the town, while no less disturbing, bore twisted elegance. The buildings here were deliberately designed, not haphazardly cobbled together from mismatched parts like the others they passed. Though still adorned with macabre displays of corpses and biological matter clinging to their facades, there was a strange artistry to it all, an unsettling appreciation for aesthetics. Windows were framed in polished bone, balconies extended from the buildings, draped in ornate fabrics that fluttered faintly in the stagnant air. Strange Gothic designs embellished the structures, intricate and disturbing. Some buildings were crowned with eerie black and gray flora, the botanical growths twisting skyward atop the tallest spires. Others took on a sinister religious air, black stone temples adorned with jet spires, and stained glass windows depicting serpentine figures. The illustrations resembled the Stations of the Cross, but these windows told the story of some unimaginable evil, recounting horrors of the prince's misdeeds. As they moved, the distant echoes of battle reached their ears, a grim reminder of the friends they had left behind, still lingering in their thoughts.
Better to let them go, little Wesley. They're as good as dead.
Wesley decided not to bite and to ignore the master agitator. He had learned long ago that despite the creature's eons-old age, it still engaged in petty torments.
Do you think you can ignore me like some tantruming child, little Wesley? I simply give you the truth. Your friends are not long for this world. It's a shame they'll just end up some story, a bedtime tale for the gruesome.
Wesley snapped. What the hell do you get out of this, huh? You could be helping me survive as we walk through this fucking hellish shithole we're in, but instead you choose to adopt the childish antics of some grade school bully. What the fuck is wrong with you?
The grade school bully is like he is because his power is uncontested. He does so because he can. And so do I. You believe such torments are childish. But what are children if not followers of the heart? Living ids that simply do and take what they want. Is that not the truest of our natures? Strip away everything and we are simply seekers of pleasure. However, only some of us can afford to be so. I am one such creature, Wesley.
Wesley wasn't about to get in an ontological debate with a thing, so he focused on the world around him, trying to discern the best way forward. The triad continued to sneak about, sometimes hiding behind trash receptacles, while other times covering themselves in nearby weeds and bushes. Finally, the buildings they were looking for came into view.
That is. Jesus, there's a lot of freaks around that thing. Why the hell is this thing so protected? The other Stygian and children of the Serpent aren't. They just wander around, fucking people's lives up.
I'm not sure. Maybe he or she isn't a Stygian or one of the prince's children. Maybe it's something else.
Look over there.
The group turned their heads toward the west side and watched as one of the guards, if that's what it was, locking one of the gates from the inside.
Perhaps they're not keeping people out, but keeping something in.
You mean this Agathustra could be a prisoner? But why? They're supposed to know everything there is to know about the prince.
Maybe that's exactly why they're a prisoner.
But then why not simply kill him?
Pragmatism is not always the way of creatures like this. They often indulge themselves because they think themselves invulnerable. Such is to our advantage.
Maffa could have been talking directly to Hesperius, as Wesley could feel the infernal creature toiling in his hidden abyss at the soothsayer's words.
Still, we have to get in there. I don't think we could just barge in guns blazing. It'll alert the whole goddamn place.
Men looked around them, trying to assess a means of entrance. There seemed to be a retinue of guards around the place. Some were quite large, 8 or 9 feet tall, with an alien physiology that couldn't be predicted.
We need a distraction of some sort.
A military tactic?
No. Metal Gear and Splinter Cell games. You always need a distraction for these types of things. Fuck. Where's a cardboard box when you need one?
What on earth are you talking about, man?
Nothing. Never mind. I'm just saying I can create a distraction and get them to follow me is all. Hopefully I can lose them and join back up with you. What if we need your assistance inside?
Look, it's the best I got.
Either that or it's an all-out assault. I don't know what else we can do.
What about there, in that smaller building? The guards are going in and out of there. Might there be a way in through that?
Could be, I suppose. How are we going to get in there?
Same way we got in the last place.
All right, I'll see what I can do.
Sal cast his gaze downward, and in an instant, a few of the hateful creatures he harbored in his eyes sprang forth, propelling him upwards before he even realized what was happening. The force lifted him beyond the sight of his companions, hurtling him into the darkened sky. As he plummeted back towards the earth, Sal dispatched his servitors, their tendrils latching onto the roof of a nearby building. With an unsettling grace, he lowered himself quietly onto the rooftop. Fortune favored him, as strange, misshapen windows allowed him a glimpse inside. He peered through the warped glass, taking in the scene below. There were four occupants within, two concealed beneath cloaks, and two he wished had remained hidden. The unrobed creatures were not unlike the denizens of Mizrith, twisted perversions of the human form. But these fiends sported jagged teeth and elongated claws, sharp enough to tear through flesh with ease. Despite their fearsome appearance, Sal was confident. He was faster, and more than a match for them. Fixing his gaze on the prowling horrors, he unleashed a menagerie of nightmarish creatures. Serpentine horrors struck like lightning, piercing through the bodies of his foes, while others slithered into their orifices, bloating them with foul green rot. The corrupted flesh swelled and twisted before collapsing into grotesque heaps, the sound of their bodies hitting the floor a nauseating, wet thud. Wesley and Moffat glanced around uneasily, unsure what to expect from their friend as the unnatural silence settled in.
How long do we wait? As long as it takes, I suppose.
The two squatted in the shadows until they saw a single, thin, snake-like thing slither out from under the door of their would-be destination. The snake curled upward like some giant finger and gestured for them to approach.
Well, I suppose that's our cue.
The two men rushed over to the small patrol building and quickly knocked on the door. It opened and Sal rushed them in. Similar to last time, the place was decorated in the entrails of the previous occupants, their bodies splayed, their organs and blood splashed against the walls.
You could be an interior decorator for this place, you know that.
Aha, very funny.
The men looked about the room, scanning it for anything useful.
This door on the floor, where does it lead?
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to check. I was busy, you know, decorating.
Moffat walked over to the door and pried it open.
Must be an underground entrance of some sort. Might as well give it a try.
Sounds like a fine idea.
The threesome made their way into the dark below and sealed the doors behind them.
A curse thrower and one of the Bell Fiend's abominations. This is a splendid day indeed. What tales I will weave with your splintered essences. You will make excellent additions to my library.
Arcos wasted no time and rushed forward to the wordy foe. But before the giant beast could reach him, the ground exploded from beneath his feet and sent him tumbling to the ground.
They heard the stories of unfathomable glories and pulled the swords beyond the sheath. The men did not wait and so suffered a terrible fate brought by the behemoth beneath.
From the gaping hole in the ground, a massive hand clawed its way into the light. Its skeletal fingers adorned with blanched bones, each tip with ebon claws. Moments later, the rest of the titan followed, towering several feet taller than even Arcos. Its grin revealed an armory of glistening, jagged teeth, while its body was a grotesque display of muscle upon muscle, each sinew appearing harder than stone. Its skin was a dark ashen gray, and its eyes burned with a sickly yellow glow, beaming with malice. Most horrifying of all were the writhing bodies pinned to its massive form, each one screaming in endless torment, faces contorted in agony, limbs twitching as they struggled in vain. The creature was not just a brute, but a prison for the damned. To Arcos' credit, he didn't so much as flinch. Instead, he met the Titan's malevolent stare with his own fiery gaze, his defiance a match for the monstrosity before him. But before anyone could react, the bard began weaving another of his cursed tales, his voice thick with malicious intent, no doubt summoning more adversaries to join the fray.
And from the abyss, the dark god did kiss the warriors from the city out of Rud. They cringed and contorted, their spirits now comported to the god's infinite hunger for blood.
From the swelling pool of crimson, twisted shapes began to rise. Their bodies were hunched and crooked, draped in strange, archaic armor that seemed to bend and twist as unnaturally as they did. Each creature possessed a maw filled with endless rows of jagged teeth, and in their clawed hands they gripped wickedly curved swords marked with unfamiliar symbols that pulsed with dark energy. As they emerged, blood poured off them in torrents, their ravenous hunger etched into every wicked sneer. Without hesitation, they lunged at Riva with the desperation of starved beasts, their mouths gaping and their blades gleaming, eager to rend flesh. Their frenzied charge was a tidal wave of violence, threatening to overwhelm everything in its path. But Riva's last curse had already reshaped the battlefield. The surrounding lands had been dammed. Lightning cracked through the stormy sky, lashing the ground with violent force, while mountain geysers erupted, splitting the earth beneath their feet. It was a desperate gamble, Riva's only chance to even the odds, to grant a fleeting glimmer of hope. As the bloodthirsty horde closed in, bolts of lightning tore through their ranks, splitting some of the fiends apart, scattering their broken bodies across the battlefield. Others were hurled into the jagged mountainside, their shattered forms reduced to nothing more than fleshy sacks of broken bones. Yet, despite the devastation, many remained unfazed, mindlessly continuing their relentless assault, undeterred by the carnage around them.
Unless you're in front of us!
Some of the creatures' bodies began to steam, filling the air with shrieks of agony. Geysers of scalding blood erupted from their chests, arms, and faces, as their skin melted, dripping like molten wax from their exposed skeletons. But no matter how many fell, there were always more, a relentless tide of monstrous flesh. Riva spat curse after curse, his words thick with venom as fire, poison, and acid dripped from his mouth. Yet even as he fought back, the grotesque mob closed in, surrounding him. Meanwhile, the underground behemoth wasted no time, slamming its massive fist into Arcos' face. The impact lifted him off his feet, sending him crashing into the nearby mountain. By the time Arcos staggered back to his feet, the creature was already upon him, grinding his body against the sharp rock as though intent on pulverizing him into dust. Arcos, however, was no ordinary foe. With a roar, he hammered his fists into the beast's back, bones crunching beneath his immense strength. Desperate to throw the behemoth off, Arcos summoned jagged bone spikes from his own body, each one stabbing deep into the creature's flesh, eliciting a guttural scream. Seizing the opportunity, Arcos grabbed the creature's head and slammed it repeatedly into the mountainside, the sickening crunch of shattering teeth and tearing flesh echoing through the battlefield. With grim determination, he braced his legs against the beast's spine and, with a strained pull, tore one of its bulky arms clean from its body, casting it aside unceremoniously. He continued to pummel the creature into the ground, bludgeoning it with his serrated fists until it lay motionless, a broken heap. Satisfied, Arcos turned his attention to the bard, intending to deal him the same brutal fate. But just as he stepped forward, another titan, identical to the last, charged from the hellish landscape and slammed into him, sending him careening across the blood-soaked ground. Groaning, Arcos looked up to see the new monstrosity lumbering toward him, while the first behemoth, armless and shattered, began to rise from the rubble. Gritting his teeth, Arcos let out a feral growl and charged back into the fray. From the tree line, Vorin watched helplessly. His eyes darted across the chaotic battlefield, overwhelmed by the swirling powers that clashed in the distance. His friends were slowing, their strength faltering under the relentless assault of the bard's creations, their bodies buckling beneath the weight of his cursed words, and there was nothing he could do to help. His mind raced, desperately clawing through the archives of his memory, searching for a solution, anything to save his comrades. But his thoughts turned up empty, every scrap of knowledge useless in the face of this overwhelming force. As he watched in horror, the bard's minions brought his friends to their knees, the bard no doubt reveling in his victory, his vile voice dripping in smug satisfaction. Vorin's heart hammered in his chest. He couldn't let this stand. He couldn't let his friends die for nothing.
God damn it! All these fucking books I've read, and not one of them can help me.
Then something took hold. The books.
Of course. The books. It's the books. The books.
Vorin took a deep breath and burst from the tree line, adrenaline surging through his veins. Lightning crackled and arced around him, the air alive with violent energy, while geysers of molten lava erupted from the craters in the ground. The wind roared like a hurricane, threatening to throw him off course, but he pushed through it, his resolve unshakable. He had only a few moments to act, just one chance to make it count. Ahead, the bard loomed over Arcos and Riva, his evil presence casting a shadow over them as they struggled against the monstrous creations of his twisted tales. Blood-hungry warriors swarmed Riva, pinning him down with grotesque hands clamped over his mouth, silencing his curses. Arcos, meanwhile, was being held by the two behemoths, their immense strength barely enough to keep him grounded. His low, guttural growls were filled with fury, promising unspeakable violence if he managed to rise.
One must always write a conclusion befitting its beginning. But here we are. I must confess, you were difficult stories to attain. Your words trapped behind clenched lips. So stoic. But all stories want to be told. They simply need the right representation. You will be my opus, my grandest tales.
The bard let out a scream unlike any he had before. A scream so powerful it cracked the stones and shook the mountains around them. His bloodthirsty warriors and colossal beasts faltered, their grips loosening. Both Riva and Arcos looked up, their eyes widening at the sight of something truly unexpected. Standing behind the bard was Vorin. His hands plunged into two of the bard's open books. The ink, his precious words, was draining from the pages, swirling like black smoke and wrapping around Vorin's body in the form of writhing, pulsing tattoos. The power the bard had once commanded was being siphoned, stolen, and twisted into something new. Riva and Arcos didn't waste a second. Seizing the opportunity, Riva unleashed a horrific curse, his words thick with malice.
This is he's a Nazi!
The ravenous soldiers around him convulsed violently before their bodies erupted, spewing forth a torrent of insects. Swarms of locusts and buzzing flies pouring from their gaping mouths, consuming them from the inside out. Arcos, with his captors momentarily stunned, acted with brutal efficiency. He grabbed the towering beast, pinning him down, and, with a swift motion, snapped its neck, then wrenched its head clean from its shoulders. The second behemoth barely had time to react before Arcos plunged his bladed fist through his chest, ripping out its heart in a spray of black ichor and crushing it to a pulp in his hand. With the battlefield momentarily cleared, Riva and Arcos turned their attention back to Vorin, now a walking canvas of stolen power, and to the bard, who stood paralyzed, his stolen magic slipping through his fingers.
The books! The books are his source of power. Hold him. Keep him busy.
Arcos seized the moment, grabbing the bard with both hands and slamming him into the earth with a force that shook the ground. He pressed the bard deeper into the bedrock, each strike driving him further into the jagged stone. The bard struggled, but Arcos's strength was unrelenting. Meanwhile, more creatures began to materialize, unspeakable horrors from the bard's countless twisted tales. But their forms flickered in and out of existence, fading like shadows as Vorin continued to siphon the ink, the very essence of the bard's stories from the books. Riva unleashed curse after curse. His words a relentless tide of destruction. Each time one of the bard's minions appeared, it was met with a brutal end, burning to ash, imploding from within, or exploding into blood and bone before it could fully manifest. Riva's curses tore through the bard's creations as quickly as they came, leaving only chaos in their wake. The battlefield was a maelstrom of power, and the bard, once in control, now found himself crushed beneath the weight of his own unraveling stories.
No! No! This cannot be! No!
The bard's voice was like a fist, blasting Arcos off of him into the ground. Riva rose up to meet him, but the back of the bard's fist knocked him aside. The demonic storyteller then loomed over Vorin, rage contorting his face.
You would steal my stories, rob the world of the dark splendor. You are the worst of these pests. A plagiarizer, a pilferer.
The bard swung his arm back and was about to destroy the man, until Arcos tackled him once more to the ground.
Finish him! Finish him now!
Vorin grabbed more books and absorbed as many pages as he could, floods of ink flying from the pages and staining his skin. Suddenly, the books burst into flames, their pages consumed by a searing inferno. Along with the bard's anguished screams, the voices of thousands of trapped souls echoed through the air. Wailing, crying, finally freed from the horrors of his twisted narratives, the heat from the fire intensified, turning the cursed tomes to ash, their once powerful words crumbling into nothingness. As the flames died down, the bard's once mighty voice faded into a pitiful whimper, his power reduced to nothing more than a shadow of its former self. The weight of his unraveling stories left him broken, the souls he had imprisoned escaping with each dying ember.
Oh, my life's work. Gone. All gone. I am nothing without my tales. You have robbed the world of their darkly splendor. What? What of my story?
Arcos looked at the dying bard and smiled.
The end.
Arcos seized the bard's head in his massive hands and, with a sickening crunch, crushed it. The Stygian's body began to unravel, eldritch energy spiraling out from the collapsing form, swirling in an ever-expanding radius. The earth trembled beneath them, and arcs of wild electricity crackled across the jagged rocks. A piercing, hellish scream erupted from the void, echoing from nowhere and everywhere at once. Then, the energy exploded outward, shattering the mountains, sundering the ground, darkening the sky. The force hurled the weary trio of warriors to the earth, their bodies battered by the chaotic surge. And then, silence. The storm of energies faded, leaving only the broken landscape and the stillness of aftermath.
Grimland is a Maltopia production. Today's episode was written by Stephen Anzalone. The episode was edited by Walker Kornfeld. Sound production and editing was performed by Stephen Anzalone. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching Maltopia. That's M-A-E-L-T-O-P-I-A. And if you'd like to know more about Grimland and contribute to its nightmarish expansion, visit us at www.patreon.com/Maltopia, where you can gain access to all sorts of art, mythologies, stories, and more. For more information about Grimland and the world of Maltopia, visit us at maltopia.com.
Discover Hydro, the best-kept secret in fitness. Hydro is the state-of-the-art at-home rower that engages 86% of your muscles, delivering the ultimate full-body workout in just 20 minutes. From advanced to beginner, Hydro has over 500 classes, shot worldwide and taught by Olympians and world-class athletes. For a 30-day risk-free trial, go to Hydro.com and use code ROW450 to save $450 on a Hydro Pro rower. That's HYDROW.com, code ROW450.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What's up, longevity junkie? It's time to get your fix. I am Buck Joffrey.
And I'm Nikki Lee. Welcome to Longevity Junkie,
the new podcast that dives deep into the science of living longer and filters out all the snake oil.
With amazing interviews and tips anyone can try.
Do I think there will be 500-year-old humans someday? I actually do.
Calories are literally interchangeable with the term energy.
I had Justin Bieber in my office. He said, I think I understand. My brain is an organ like my heart is an organ.
We're also your guinea pigs, pushing boundaries.
And we bring you along for the ride.
Last night you were on ayahuasca, right?
Yeah.
Which is wonderful. I love it. So
listen to Longevity Junkie now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.